All right. Good morning, everyone. Ms. Adrians has arrived, so we may begin. I'd like to call this meeting of the Education Finance Division to order, please. We are, it looks like, a little short of a quorum, but we'll get there, and once we do, we'll have the excitement of doing the minutes. Today is National School Bus Driver Day. I've always considered that to be the worst job in education because you've probably got the most responsibility of all. And especially with a day like today, where I don't know what other members' commute in was like, but mine was slow.
They were rude people.
That has happened occasionally. Reverend Murphy, you're getting dangerously close to my talking about dropping my son off at his high school this morning, and I don't think we need to hear that story.
It wasn't in your neighborhood.
No, I'm confident of that. You didn't look anything like the guy in the other car. But Reverend Juergens, you visited bus drivers this morning. Thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Today is Bus Driver Appreciation Day in Minnesota, and as I've been able to do, this is the third year now, go visit the bus drivers in the morning. I got to the Hastings Bus Company about 6:15. Some of the buses had already left because of the weather. They were getting an early start on some of the rural routes, and it was kind of fun. Now, the first year I went there, they were looking at me like, who's this guy? And when I walked in today, they said, well, there he is. We were wondering if you were going to come again this year. So, and then I told them that this is the new dress code, which they weren't happy to hear about. But, I just want to give this shout out to the bus drivers. They're the ones in this committee, we hear about programs and funding for our students. And all of that's necessary because they're able to get to school. And so the bus drivers are the ones that pick them up in the morning, and they get them to school safely, and they get them home safely at night. We couldn't do what we do without those bus drivers in many cases. And it's not just the drivers, but it's also the dispatchers, the school bus aides, the mechanics that keep the buses rolling. This has been a very challenging year for them, as well as all of us. And so they're dealing with that. And the bus drivers, most of them, if there's a snow day, they don't get paid. So with more snow days this year than a normal year, than on average, I mean, that's affecting their pocketbook as well. So I just want to publicly thank the bus drivers for what they do, along with all of our educators. But as you said, Chair Dabney, it's not an enviable job in many ways. But they all seem, the ones that I talked to today, they all seem to really enjoy the camaraderie. They show up early so that they can, talk and have coffee with each other before they go on out on their route. So thank you for the time to acknowledge that, and just wanted to again acknowledge that today is Bus Driver Appreciation Day.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Juergens. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Juergens, for sharing that. And I echo all of your comments. It seems like a great time for me to acknowledge one of my bus drivers. Sometimes in professional life, people go into a profession. Their name just matches what they're supposed to do. So I started my public education at a K-12 school in Sevastopol, Wisconsin. And Mrs. Bussey always made sure I got off the bus as a kindergartner before the seniors. She would make them go all the way back to the back of the bus and let me off as a kindergartner. So, hello, Mrs. Bussey, and thank you for that. So, and happy day to all the other bus drivers.
Can't make some of this stuff up. Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add one thing. When I was in high school, the bus drivers at that time owned their own buses, so they're all independent contractors.
Oh, my word.
And the nice thing about that is they had consistency, so you got to know your bus driver very well. And we happen to have a bus driver that was probably the craziest driver. Is this on TV?
I'm not sure we're on TV, but we are on it's kind of like being on radio, Representative Norris.
But as drivers or riders on a bus that took about 12 miles to get to school, that bus was on the floor. I mean, we were traveling as fast as that bus could go. And as kids, we thought, this is wonderful. You know, it's like a bus race, you know.
There we go.
And we always won. So the bus driver is gone. Most of the family's gone. So even if we're on TV, nobody would know what I'm talking about. So thank you. But it was a good time.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well done. All right. Thank you all very much for marking Bus Driver Appreciation Day. We do now have a quorum. Representative Joachim, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the February 26th meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at them right now, and I'd like to move the minutes for the February 26th meeting.
Thank you very much.
Education Finance Division.
Any discussion to that motion, to the Joachim motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Commissioner. So, members, today is not going to be the detailed overview of the budget. We've got that scheduled for hopefully next week-ish. Ish. We have that scheduled for March.
Right.
But did want the commissioner to come in and visit with us to give us the high-level overview of the governor's budget proposal, the goals, and the pieces that distinguish it. So, Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much, Representative Dabney. My name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I'm Commissioner of Education. So it is my pleasure today. Thank you so much for making room on your agenda to talk about the budget for One Minnesota. It is my privilege to be able to be here today to present this budget. And I'm going to start with, just so you know, the budget at a glance is $733 million in recommendations to stabilize education funding, support our students where they are, support American Indian students, with a special focus also on some data-driven solutions we think are critical, and a plan to recruit and retain high-quality teachers. We'll start with stabilizing education funding. The majority of the funding in this bill is proposed to be invested in a general education increase of 3% the first year of the biennium and 2% the second year of the biennium. As you know, this is the most flexible aid our schools receive, and this is the aid that our schools can use for their programming to meet the needs of the students they have in their schools. And it totals of about $523 million. Another investment we are proposing is stabilizing education funding is to invest $59 million in retaining the 4,000 spots for voluntary pre-kindergarten that are in 140 schools and 80 school districts and charter schools that are set to expire under the current law. And as these spots have existed, these schools have indicated a deep interest in maintaining these voluntary pre-kindergarten spots. We also recommend an investment of $77 million to freeze the special education cross-subsidy where it is right now. A number of you know about the situation with the special education cross-subsidy growing in our schools, and a number of you have heard directly from from our schools about what this impact is on their budget. By freezing the cross-subsidy and keeping it from growing, that means that an investment in our general education revenue, like our proposal of 3% and 2%, can really mean 3% and 2%, which means we have preserved the buying power of that general education revenue investment. This $77 million would keep the cross-subsidy where it is right now, and it would be we would do a few things to make sure that we are keeping that cross-subsidy frozen where it is right now, and we can certainly talk about that in detail, but it would mean adjusting the growth cap from one that has been frozen since 2016 to one that would be used annually and adjusted on current data, and furthermore to move away from that frozen base by reducing the annual inflation rate by 0.2% each year until the inflation adjustment reaches 2% from the current 4.6% that is on the hold harmless formula. We also recommend another proposal to stabilize education funding to allow local school boards to continue prospective operating referenda with board action. We would recommend that if a school board has a referendum in front of its voters, that it could choose to add language prospectively, pardon me, stating that in the future, if it is just a renewal of that referenda, that the school board could vote on renewing it after the voters have decided both to approve the referendum as well as approve that referendum with that language saying that prospectively the school board would have the authority to do that. We also recommend we increase our school safety levy. This school safety levy is the most flexible school safety money our schools have. They can use it for infrastructure. They can use it for personnel. And we are recommending that we also include a proposal that expands allowable uses to also include professional development around school safety, such as training on restorative practices, social and emotional learning, perhaps, or other evidence-based practices. This increase would be, our recommendation is that it is $9 in year one of the biennium, and it would be up to $18 year two for a total of $54 per student in a district, for example. Finally, one of our proposals on stabilizing school funding includes convening a school finance task force. We convened a school finance task force in 2012 and in 2014, and that one was particular to facilities. And many of the recommendations that came from those school task forces have been implemented. And now is a good time to both review the progress we have made as well as look forward into what it is we need to do. And convening that school finance task force, of course, also gives us an opportunity to look at that special education cross-subsidy and come to a conclusion about what it is we can collectively do about that. We also in our budget propose supporting our students where they are. One way we propose doing that is an $8 million investment to expand the support of our regional centers of excellence in Marshall, Rochester, Sartell, Fergus Falls, and Mountain Iron. Our regional centers of excellence have been working with our comprehensive support schools, and those are the 5% of our Title I schools who have been identified based on student achievement, or high schools with a four-year graduation rate of below 67% for any individual school group. Right now, this includes 47 schools and 147 high schools. With this proposed increase, we could expand our support from the comprehensive support schools to our targeted support schools. This would be about 157 schools that may need to focus on a single student group or may need support on some of the measures of our North Star accountability system, but not all of them. Also, to support our students where they are, we recommend expanding full-service community schools. Our first investment as a state was made in 2016 and then again in 2017. We recommend investing $2 million a year in this biennium, and actually we would recommend investing $2 million for the next 4 years. Part of that reason is that we understand that some of our schools are eager to jump into a full-service community schools opportunity. And if we reopen a grant program, that they might be ready to submit a grant right away. We recognize that other schools may have waited to see if this program was going to continue, and they may want the time to see that now that they can see the funding on the horizon, they will take the time to do the research on what a full-service community school is, what it could mean for their community, perhaps study a full-service community school that is already implemented here in the state of Minnesota, and then submit a grant. And so with $2 million a year annually, we believe that we can also just leverage the sort of evidence-based practice that community schools are known for and expand them across the state of Minnesota. Another way we want to support students where they are is we would like to create a second chance agency director to coordinate services among the Minnesota Department of Education, Minnesota Department of Higher Education, as well as the Minnesota Department of Corrections, focusing on students most vulnerable to juvenile detention or students who have a family member incarcerated. By focusing on opportunities for this student family population, we will elevate work focused on prevention and opportunity rather than just typical reentry programs or restitution. Last year, there was an estimated 430 students in our juvenile correction system, and according to the Minnesota Student Survey, 1 in 6 students self-report in our public schools that they have a parent or guardian in the correction system. It is widely regarded that that is a number that is underreported because of the stigma and self-reporting. That is about 15% of our public school student population. Focusing attention here so we don't overlook an opportunity to invest in our students' first chances of success would be the primary focus of this second chance agency director. Another way we want to support our students where they are is we would like to invest $1 million annually to support our students in our schools experiencing housing instability or homelessness. At any point, there are 9,000 of our students experiencing homelessness across the state. 76 of our 87 counties have documented a number of students experiencing housing instability or homelessness. So this is a statewide situation for our schools. We are recommending this $1 million annually to expand our services. So as you know, currently under the McKinney-Vento Act, if you have documented that 350 of your students or more are experiencing housing instability or homelessness, you will receive funding to support those students. We are recommending that if a school or a school system can document 100 students or more, or 5% of their student population, right, if it's a small student population, that they would receive some support to support students experiencing homelessness or housing instability. Additionally, we propose language that also expands the use of this funding so that it can be used for staff, but that it could also be tapped for things that we are hearing schools and school districts try to implement for their students. It might be winter coat drives. It might be food shelves. They might be weekend backpacks or summer backpacks that our schools have been trying to meet the needs of students in really creative ways. This budget pays particular attention to support for our American Indian students as well, including a recommendation that we invest in supporting equalization of support for our American Indian tribal schools. Our American Indian tribal contract schools would benefit from continuing the investment we're making in them now, as opposed to sliding back to the $1,500 a student investment, which would mean a 50% cut in the funding we are currently offering them to equalize their support in our tribal schools. Additionally, we are proposing language that would then tie this support to our general education formula as well. We are also recommending that $150,000 annually support our Tribal Nations Education Committee in their role of in consulting with schools and districts that do not have a tribal nation nearby. As you know, the Every Student Succeeds Act has mandated that tribal consultation exists to support our American Indian students, but ESSA did not come with some funding to support that mandate. We understand that, again, to get to every corner of the state of Minnesota where there is a responsibility to consult, that is going to take a modest amount of funding to set up meetings, some travel costs, etc. So we are recommending $150,000 a year to help support that consultation responsibility that we have. One of the other ways we are recommending we support our American Indian students as well is to clarify the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program. This program currently provides grants. We are proposing language that would clarify the use of these grants. For example, to allow grantees to partner with tribal colleges and community colleges. One of the some of the evidence that has come forward as we are improving recruitment practices for Indigenous teachers is that a number of students would like to start their higher education experience closer to home. And so by clarifying that a grantee could partner with a tribal college or a community college to begin that higher education experience, we would create a more solid pathway to do that. Also, we would define American Indian or Alaskan Native. We would allow some recruitment with some of this funding into the program to make sure that everybody knew this program was accessible and existed. We would also tiered priority for students, and we would expand the programming itself. The budget for One Minnesota also focuses on data-driven solutions. One investment we are proposing we make to continue an emphasis on data-driven decision-making is to invest in increasing the number of people at the Minnesota Department of Education and our data analytics staff to meet the needs of the data information requests that are coming to us. Some of their data analytics staff are currently funded through a federal grant that is expiring this September of 2019. These staff would no longer be able to support and provide services to the stakeholders that our public has come to expect. To give you an idea, we have seen a dramatic increase in the number of data requests to the Minnesota Department of Education, and we want to make sure we are honoring all data requests as well as statutory deadlines. I asked my staff for some data on what they are asked for, and they get approximately 70 data requests a month of varying complexity. So about 3 new data requests per day come into staff from across the state of Minnesota. Also, to focus on data-driven solutions, we are recommending that we invest approximately $140,000 annually to create a position that would provide for a staff specialist to organize, gather data, and expand opportunities to learn from our turnaround arts schools. There are currently 6 turnaround arts schools in the state of Minnesota. They partner with the Kennedy Center of Arts to provide an arts immersion experience. These schools are located in Minneapolis, in St. James, on the Red Lake Reservation, and in Rochester currently. And because the data and the stories coming from these schools are very compelling, we would like someone to, again, organize that and gather that data and then be able to share those stories so that more schools in the state of Minnesota can learn from the success of their programming and have better access to those stories that are coming from those turnaround arts programs. Another way we would like to invest in data-driven solutions is we would like to invest $1.6 million in allowing our data systems to connect to each other. In 2016, as you know, the Minnesota legislature passed the All Kids Count Act, which requires MDE to report graduation rates, the results of the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, and more, and by detailed ethnicity of students. This launched a discussion of the limitations of our current data systems. So, for example, demographic data collection does not contain the Minnesota Common Course Catalog, which details classes offered at a school, meaning that the department cannot report how many students of color or American Indian students have access to that well-rounded education, let alone how they are doing in those courses. The department applied for and won a 5-year federal grant to help fund the development of part of the data collection system to collect accurate, detailed demographic information. So for some of those data systems, this work has started. So this $1.6 million proposal would allow us to reach the rest of them. This will fully fund our IT request, which is that work that began in 2016 with the All Kids Count Act. We also propose to recruit and retain quality educators in order to continue to improve the work we do to meet the needs of our students. One proposal to raise professionalism and the quality of our teaching workforce is to promote National Board certification as a natural path for accomplished teaching for a career educator in the state of Minnesota. Currently, Minnesota ranks 33rd for the number of board-certified teachers we have, about 483 out of approximately 57,000 teachers. In contrast, well, they did have a few decades of a head start for us, but currently 89.9% of Minnesota's doctors have gone through their voluntary board certification procedure by passing their tier evaluation. So we would like to model the expansion of board certification in education off of the board certification success they have seen in medicine. And we have a recommendation to invest in diversifying our teaching profession. To address the teaching shortage overall, and certainly to address the shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in particular, we recommend that we invest $1.8 million annually for the Department of Higher Education to invest in student teaching so that we can reach more of our population that has one barrier to becoming a licensed teacher in the state of Minnesota, and that is their student teaching experience. We also recommend investing $182,500 annually in expanding the concurrent enrollment introduction to teaching course. This is a course that allows high school students to explore a career in teaching while earning college credit so that when they get to their higher education institution, they can hit the ground running in their chosen license area and their chosen field of study. Furthermore, we recommend investing $2 million annually to promote mentoring programs, induction programs, and retention incentives for teachers of color and American Indian teachers. We recommend that as the state of Minnesota, we have made investments in recruiting and training to diversify our profession. And in order to preserve the impact of that investment, we have to invest in retaining our teachers of color and our indigenous teachers. And by thoughtfully investing in a mentorship program and in induction programs, that will be one solid way of doing that. Before closing, I would like to share just a few other recommendations in the governor's budget that are related to students and their families. First, in the Department of Corrections, there is a $2 million proposal to strengthen family corrections connections for incarcerated parents and to support successful reentry for incarcerated American Indians. In the Department of Higher Education, there's over $54 million proposed to expand the state grant, over $250,000 to provide stipends for 250 low-income Minnesota students in grade 3 to 11 to attend summer enrichment programs. And in the Department of Housing, there is $6 million proposed to expand Homework Starts with Home, which is an investment to serve an estimated 375 families with school-age children to support their housing stability. And in the Department of Human Services, there's an investment of $9.3 million to expand and strengthen school-linked mental health. So I want to thank you so much for your time this morning. And if you have time, I'm happy to take your questions. And, of course, I am happy to make sure that I follow up or my staff follows up with any of you on any other details you would like to have.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Members, we do have a few minutes for questions. I think today is about the big picture. I don't think we're quite ready for the detailed questions. Those I think we'll save for Dr. Melcher at a later date. But Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Ricker, for being here today. You know, we hear from stakeholders all the time. They want the schools, they want education fully funded, whether it's teachers, parents, school boards. My question is, that's rather ambiguous, though. Does this budget fully fund education?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Dabney, Representative Juergens. One of the reasons we propose having a school finance task force that would follow up on the work that was done in 2012 and 2014 is to examine exactly that question.
Representative Juergens?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is your expectation that the House of Representatives pass this budget as is or close to it, or what are your expectations, I guess? Thank you.
Yes. Commissioner, what's your wish list?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. It's my privilege to present this as a full package of as part of the governor's balanced budget, and we're really excited about the budget we have put together for education, and I am absolutely excited to talk about every portion of it as a package.
Representative Juergens.
My other questions were more detailed. I'll hold those for another day.
Thank you, sir. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here. And I want to give some props to your staff. They've done a nice job of trying to connect. Schedules are hard to manage, but I appreciate the efforts. I just wanted to follow up a little bit with Representative Juergens. I understand talking about this is a package, but the governor's the chief executive officer.
Yes.
Is this the budget he wants to see? Is this the budget you want to see going forward, and you know, not supporting this as a blueprint or not talking about aspirations? Is this the budget?
Commissioner.
Representative Dabney and Representative Kreshaw, thank you so much for asking. Yes, this is the budget we would like to see for our public schools in One Minnesota.
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you. And just follow up. And good. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm trying to help my colleague, Representative Dabney, get to a full budget, lend him some support. Are there any areas of this budget that you recognize as aspirational that you go, okay, if we have to, depending on how the February forecast comes out, would there be adjustments? Would there be other appropriation or a supplemental that may come after that? Are some of those areas in here?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Representative. I believe this is the package that we have presented as of today, and this is the package I'm prepared to support.
Okay. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. On your slide where you talk about investing more in the regional centers,
yes,
has the department collected data over the years that these centers have been active to know whether or not the help that was provided for these schools or teachers or staff had a positive effect, and is there any specific data that we can look at that shows that regional centers are really working out there to close the achievement gap?
Commissioner.
Representative Dabney, Representative Erickson, thank you so much for asking. Yes, we do have data, and I will make sure we give you that specific data that we have, and I will take one moment to tab through and look for my data here. Because I have, sorry, I don't have it. Thank you. Where is it? Pardon me for not color coding.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the commissioner could provide us with that report. That would be.
Oh, I would be happy to.
Please.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So follow up, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Certainly, Representative Erickson.
So, Commissioner, has the course catalog been completed? Because we've been wrestling with this for a few years. So down on your slide on page 23, mm-hmm. if we're going to connect the course catalog and the MARS system, that we're going to know in various areas whether or not children have access to a well-rounded education.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Erickson, we are still collecting entries for the course catalog. I just talked with staff last week about what our plan needs to be going forward to complete the collection of that. And then our goal is with some of this IT support to make sure that we are fulfilling the All Kids Count Act and that we do have accurate data to share about the course catalog.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question. Mm-hmm. This is not in your slides, but I noticed that the governor is proposing to increase funding to the Perpich School of the Arts. And with its declining enrollment, I'm wondering what you see, and you can report this to us in a later at a later time. What is the cost benefit when you compare it to other needs that we have in the state?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Erickson, I think we need to look into what we are doing on behalf of the Purpose Center, and that is one of the conversations I have been having with staff to determine what our path is for supporting the Purpose Center going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Being that it's School Bus Drivers Day today, and the real problem that we have in funding our busing across the state, there's over 65 school districts that are having problems with their transportation sparsity. Do you see that the governor's budget is going to be addressing this issue? And if not, would you be able to go to the governor and say that we have an issue with paying for our transportation for, I believe there's over 65 school districts that have a deficit. Some of them are in $800, $900 million a year that they're short on covering the cost of their transportation.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Detmer, thank you so much for asking that question. One of the reasons that the largest investment we make in this education budget proposal is into the basic formula because of the connection the basic formula has to sparsity and sparsity transportation, so that will be directly supported by the support we're giving the general education formula.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So I don't have that in front of me, but so how much money, extra money, are we putting into our transportation, getting our students to school?
Commissioner.
Representative Dabney, Representative Detmer, I will get that number to you. Dr. Melcher says it's about $2 million annually.
Yes, annually.
$2 million annually. Thank Representative
you,
Detmer?
Sorry. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment.
For the biennium, a clarification.
Okay. Just a comment. I know some of our school districts that are, I know Forest Lake, they're about $1 million short every year. Bemidji's about $800,000 short. Anoka about $600,000 short. So we're looking at, if you look at 65 school districts, there's a real shortage of funding for just to get our students to school. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as we talk about transportation or different issues, I just keep coming back to the fact that I'm excited about this task force to really take a look at our funding, because I think we're at a time we really need to look at some monumental changes that we may have to do incrementally. And what I find us talking about this year, last session, are all the little pails of funding that happen under the broader umbrella. And we keep looking at how are we going to take care of this pail or that pail, when in reality, I really think we need to be addressing the bigger issue overall and giving the flexibility to our districts independently.
Thank you.
Dr. Melcher?
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Melcher, please introduce yourself for the tape.
My name is Tom Melcher. I'm the Director of Finance at the Department of Education. I just wanted to correct the data I just provided to you. The $2 million that I quoted was the increase in the sparsity aid, which goes for programs. The transportation sparsity piece is $5.2 million for the biennium. So the increase in the general education formula increases both the regular sparsity and the transportation sparsity. And I would also add that a portion of the $77 million investment in the special education program also helps to cover some of the transportation costs associated with special needs transportation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Melcher. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. And again, Dr. Melcher, is that based on per pupil, or are we taking consideration the number of miles that some of these school districts have to travel between families, between schools, and so forth? Because some of these districts are really spread out, and the per pupil funding mechanism is not meeting the needs.
Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, the increase in transportation sparsity is a percentage increase on what the school districts currently receive. So the more the district has longer miles, greater distances to travel, They receive a higher per pupil allowance for transportation sparsity. So it's basically a 3% increase over current law in the first year and about a 5% increase over current law in the second year. So the more sparsely populated the district is, the higher the increase is per pupil. So it's a larger per pupil increase in isolated rural districts where they have to travel more miles.
Representative Detmer?
Thank you.
Representative Jervins, you get to wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, oftentimes in large organizations, we hear the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And I just want to put out there something that Representative Erickson asked, reminded me of this. And we have the chair of the Capital Investment Committee on our Education Finance Division Committee here. We had a presentation the other day for a bonding request near the Purpich School. For reasons of safety and getting students to and from school. And while that's not under the purview of this committee, I just want to make sure that everybody is aware of all of the moving parts and that is, again, not part of this budget, but it is still state money if we were to go forward with that. And I just want to make sure that we keep that in perspective as well.
Thank you, Representative. And Commissioner, I did appreciate that your testimony today included elements in Health and Human Services and corrections and those pieces that touch the K-12 system because they touch the lives of students. So thank you for that. Dr. Melcher, Ms. Snyder, Commissioner Ricker, thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much to the committee.
Is Representative Tabke? There he is. Please come down, members. We're now going to move to House File 681. Apparently, we're on a transportation theme here today from National Bus Driver Appreciation Day through the commissioner's presentation and the discussion of the increases in sparsity aid and sparsity transportation aid to Representative Tabke's House File 681. Representative Richardson, would you like to move House File 681 be before the committee and held over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Tabke, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you very much, members, for having me today. It was an honor to present to you last Friday in Windham, so it was great to have everyone along with that. And I did not have treats in Windham, that being my first bill in front of you, so we're making that up today, especially thanks to the treat police, Sarah Burt. So she made sure to remind me that I was that it was my turn, and I did not disappoint. These are from Donut Connection in Shakopee, Minnesota, so they are awesome. So
Ms. Burt has many responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So thank you very much for having us today to talk about this very important bill. I have some great testifiers here with us today. But what this bill in general does is allows school bus transportation to be reimbursed for the ability to take pregnant and parenting teens to the appropriate classes and curriculum for their needs. And so we've got Darren Kermis here to present the program and why it is important to Minnesota.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. My name is Darren Kermis. I'm the superintendent of the Southwest Metro Intermediate School District. It's a pleasure to be back here today. I had a chance to speak to many of you at the House Policy Committee meeting a few days ago, and so I don't want to bore you with the same exact statistics, but I'd like to give you a couple of pieces of summary from that. Teen pregnancies in Minnesota, and before I start that, it is nice to be here talking about transportation on School Bus Driver Appreciation Day, especially with the programs that we operate in the intermediate district. These drivers are amazing with what they do in transporting our kids across the counties. Data from 2015, there were 3,161 pregnancies in Minnesota for teen girls between age 15 and 19. Sadly, across the country, the graduation rate for teen parents is it's disappointing at best. It's abysmal. It's less than 50%. Our program, the New Beginnings program run by Southwest Metro, our graduation rate is at or above the state average. So pregnant and parenting teen coming to us has basically the same chance of graduating as any other student. In addition to that, they get some services that as a young parent I would have loved to have had. These programs, our program has high quality academics included. It also has prenatal and parenting education as part of it. And then as a third part, we have high quality daycare for the children, the infants and toddlers of the girls, so that they can be in their building or across kitty corner across the street receiving academic instruction, but be that close to their child and know that their child is getting quality instruction. That's why our program works. We are not the only program like this in the state. Minneapolis Public Schools, Intermediate 287, Rochester, there are many others that have wonderful programs similar to this that have been in existence for a long time. Ours has been running since 1980. In that time, we've served over 2,500 pregnant and parenting teen girls. The dilemma that we faced and why we were in front of you last year, and I've actually been working on this bill literally for 5 years, is let me just tell you a very brief story that came out of New Prague. New Prague is one of our member school districts. We have some of our programs for kids with disabilities in Chaska. New Prague runs small buses and vans back and forth between New Prague and Chaska, New Prague and Shakopee, New Prague and Jordan, and some of our other programs. These buses and vans often have empty seats. A couple years ago, New Prague was running that van. There were empty seats, and there were two girls who one was pregnant and one already had her infant in New Prague. They were not going to New Prague High School at the time. They basically stopped coming. They knew of the New Beginnings program. They wanted to go. We said, well, we've got empty seats on this bus. Let them come. It's not going to cost a penny more. The girls got on the bus. The girls went. They were there for the balance of the year. They graduated. It was a success story. That summer, we had our transportation audit. And MDE, and I'm not bashing MDE, they were absolutely correct in their assessment because of the way the law reads, which is why we're here. MDE said, well, you had four kids on this van, you got 100% special ed reimbursement. The two girls in the pregnant and parenting teen class didn't have disabilities. So they took back 50% of our transportation aid for those two seats. And I argued that, and I said, but it costs the same. Those girls didn't add a penny to the cost of this. And we got services to kids, but because the way the statute read, they didn't have a disability, they couldn't be counted. All we are seeking here is a mechanism to ensure that if the district is running a bus like New Prague was, that they are able to put other kids on that bus and get them to the services. It doesn't cost any more. It is possible with this that a district could open a new route, which is why there is a fiscal note. We have the Senate one already. That came in at $60,000 annually. We're waiting for the House fiscal note to come forward. But it is, if New Prague didn't have a bus going, they could, under this, establish it. One other thing I would point out is this retains local control. This is not an unfunded mandate. This is permissive. This would be the school district still has the option to transport the students to a program like this.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, it sounds like a great bill, and this is not really related to the bill, but did they have car seats?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, the transportation, they have car seats, infant car seats. It's mandated when we transport, so that's there. They come safely to us. And if I could, to that point, one of the other reasons that I've been advocating so strongly for this for so long is, you know, I remember back, and now it's growing on a lot of years for me, but I remember being a teen driver. I watched my daughter be a teen driver. We're not very good, right? That's just what it is. And I remember being a young parent, and my driving was worse. You talk about high distractibility when you've got an infant crying in the back seat. When we have girls who have their own car and are able to get to our program because their district isn't able to transport them, think about, we have been so fortunate and lucky that we haven't had tragedy with that. You're driving on Greater Scott and Carver County roads with a teen driver in weather like we have right now with an infant possibly crying in the back seat. It's a recipe for disaster. I would much rather have us be able to provide this transportation with all the safety nets and carts and everything else and get the kids there just as safely as their peers riding a traditional school bus. That's the other impetus behind trying to move this forward.
Representative Tapke, can I just call a pause here? I see two young women sitting behind you, and I'm wondering if you have other testifiers.
I do, yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
You ready for that?
I am.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have two extraordinary young women who this bill would have definitely helped, and they would like to tell their stories to the committee today.
Marvelous. Thank you so much for joining us today. So the process is introduce yourself, because your testimony is being recorded, as is all the discussion here. That way we know who's talking, and then proceed with your testimony. So you choose who goes first.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sydney Landy. I am a 17-year-old senior, and I have a one-year-old daughter named Valerie. We're both from Montgomery and Chaska. Because I don't have reliable transportation to school, I'm living between both parents' houses. When I found out I was pregnant, I dropped out of school and tried to do online classes, but I felt isolated and had no support. Then I found out about New Beginnings program for pregnant and parenting teens in Chaska. New Beginnings provides classes to finish high school, encourages support from peers, connects us with public health nurses and mental health workers, and helps us plan for the future. I am proud to say that because of New Beginnings, I will be graduating on time this spring, and I have already been accepted to Hennepin Technical College for next year to prepare for a career in the medical field. My daughter Valerie has benefited from the on-site childcare. It is developmentally appropriate, safe, and serves healthy meals. Valerie knows she's cared for, and I can visit her in the mornings. I have learned much about parenting in the new mom's parenting education class. Unfortunately, I am unable to get a bus to take me and Valerie to school. I drive 35 miles each way and need to work a part-time job to pay for gas. Sometimes I arrive late or miss days due to transportation issues. I know there are other young moms out there who would benefit from a school like New Beginnings but have no way to get there if their district does not provide transportation. I know it would have made it harder for me to graduate on time if it was not for New Beginnings. Voting in for this bill will help other teens, parents stay in school and learn how to care for themselves and their children. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Landy. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Jolene Reyna. I'm an 18-year-old senior, originally from Jordan, now Chaska. My daughter, Mia, is 10 months old. I am also thankful for all the support my daughter and I get from the New Beginnings program. However, last year when I lived in Jordan, I did not get any transportation from the district and I missed a lot of school. I would have to come an hour early and stay late to wait for rides. Because of this, I am a year behind for graduation. Thankfully, this year we moved to Chaska and I get district transportation. I get to school on time and my attendance has improved. Now I am back on track to graduate this June and I plan to attend Hennepin Technical College in the fall. Trained to be a medical assistant. Your support of this bill will allow other teen parents to get needed support, finish high school, and plan for their futures. Thank you.
Thank you both very much for coming today and appearing before the committee. Representative Kunesh Padin, you had a question previously.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. It's not so much a question as another one of my stories.
Oh.
Back in the day, in the 80s, I ran a family daycare while I was going to school myself. I had three young kids, and it allowed me to be home with them. But services that I was able to provide was to hold some spots open for teenage moms. I lived just a few blocks from Edison High School, and those moms were able to bring their babies to my daycare, go to school. One mom actually came back over her lunch hour and fed the baby and made those strong connections. And it was an incredible opportunity both for me and for those young women. There were a couple of the students that were often not able to bring their children or didn't have the transportation. And so, of course, that left an empty spot in my daycare, but it also made me aware of the hardship for these young women who want to provide a good, safe place for their children while they're getting their education. And the additional barriers that it took to get to where they needed to be, drop their baby off, get to school, come back and pick them up, and that sort of thing. So this is a great bill, and it certainly is a way to remove those barriers and to ensure that we have healthy children, healthy families. And if we can do it in such a way that, you know, as proposed here, where really and truly, if it doesn't cost any additional dollars to the districts, then I'm in full support of it.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Representative Tabke, I've just got one question on page 2, line 29. It stipulates that the high-quality child care has to serve all the children of enrolled pupils. And I guess I'm just wondering, thinking of the superintendent's transportation audit experience, what if there's two children and the older child, the mother, has chosen to place in a different daycare setting, maybe an infant is home with grandma or someone else? Does that then disqualify that student from availing themselves of this transportation?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I will let Mr. Kermis answer that question. And then I do have another testifier. So,
yes. Thank you. Superintendent Kermis, can you help me with that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The what we have found is that across the state, when we look at these programs, such as ours, again, the ones I referenced in 287 in Minneapolis and Rochester, I liken it to a three-legged stool. Where we have seen these programs be documentedly very successful is when they have all three components in-house as part of the program, where the academic instruction, where the prenatal and parenting education, and where the child care is all together on site. There is part of the curriculum and work that goes with having access to the child during the day and having those opportunities. I am not sitting here today in any way saying that the situation you described might not be successful for a student. All I'm saying is that with the ones that we've seen, these are the ones that we know work when it has all three of those components, and that's why all three are written in here today. So it does, this language, as written, would in fact require that, to that point, that would need to be a child care part of the program that we are doing.
Thank you for that clarification. Ms. Dietrich.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. The Minnesota School Boards Association would like to go on record as supporting House File 681. In 2018, the Jordan School District brought forth a resolution to our delegate assembly urging the legislature to allow pregnant and parenting teen students to be transported using special education vans and buses when space is available without a reduction to the school district revenue. This resolution, passed by school board members across the state, passed overwhelmingly, and for several reasons that we believe. First of all is that it encourages pregnant teens to stay in school and to graduate. And this also has a side benefit to school boards because now under ESSA, we are it's part of our accountability system, that high school graduation. So in anything that we can do to remove barriers to high school graduation is good. It provides local flexibility for school board members, and it is at no cost to the school board. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have this question for the author because I heard Ms. Reyna say that she hoped others could have this opportunity, and yet in line point 2.25, this is only for programs that are established on or before January 1 of 18. Don't we want to give this opportunity, as I think Ms. Reyna suggested, mm-hmm. to others? Representative Tabke.
Representative Tabke.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, I would love if you want to strike that from this bill. That would be incredible. But the fact of the matter is that when it came through, the last time this came through the legislature to try and get passed, when that wording was not in there, it had an ungodly fiscal appropriation to it that was nothing that would that would be prudent to move forward with. And the reasoning for that is that if without this language in here, any school that has this type of program across the state, this bill would allow and incentivize, which I think everyone would probably agree it's a really good thing, to have communities and schools starting programs similar and the same as New Beginnings. And so with that, it ballooned the cost of this program. So this line is in there to be a cost control mechanism in order to keep this program as it sits today from the fiscal note being gigantic for it. And we have requested a fiscal note for this bill. It was due last week. We have not seen it yet. And so that's where we're at on that piece. So that's why that is in there as a cost control mechanism. And if this gets through and works, I would love to come back to you at a future date with a secondary piece to say that as you've seen, this is extremely successful, and the data shows what is the success that we're seeing from these programs, and it should be allowed to be expanded for other reasons throughout the state. So that's why that's in there. So if you want to strike it, I'm more than happy.
Representative Erickson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't strike it yet. I certainly think we want to look at this fairness issue, and because, as Ms. Dietrich pointed out, graduation rates are very important under the ESSA plan. But more than that, these young mothers who have come to testify, and this is the second time I've heard you young ladies, they are showing us, you know, what can happen when we provide this opportunity for them. And we want that. And I just thank them for their testimonies, but also hoping that if we have others that want to enter programs like this, they won't be shut out. But we'll check the fiscal note. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Tabke, any closing statement?
No.
Back me up. Ms. Burt has a number of responsibilities, and keeping me on track is one of those. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House file something or other? 681. That's it.
I was having to look myself.
All right. Seeing none, now we get to your closing statement, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just am really excited about this bill and the possibilities it has, so I look forward to everyone's support as it moves into the future and doing great things for Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Representative Tabke, Superintendent, thank you. Ms. Landy, Ms. Reyna, thank you very much. Best to Valerie and Mia.
Mr. Chair, I have one more thing to add.
Nope.
Is that these young women behind me, they drove, I think it was over 2 hours to get here today from the Southwest Metro, and so they really stuck it out to get here for this, and I appreciate them being here to share their stories, so thank you.
Wonderful. With that, Representative Richardson renews her motion that House File 681 be held over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Members, we're coming up short today. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.